Welcome to the seventh week of Walled Garden Weekly. I'm Arash Kishmirian. I'm joined here by Kevin Panzerande. We've managed to make it for seven lucky weeks recording this show.
Yeah.
And people seem to like it. We're getting still good feedback. People have not said, you know, we'd really appreciate it if you could stop making these and I've unsubscribed from your show. So we must be doing something right. So we'll keep doing it and hopefully people will still enjoy it. So a little bit different this week. I am on a ketogenic diet, which means I'm basically not eating carbs and my brain is going to convert from burning glucose to something else. And hopefully that'll be a lot of weight loss for me. It is a crash fad, awesome diet, but
it's a white person diet.
It is. I went to Whole Foods and I ate like a whole lot of meat. It was expensive, but delicious.
Listen to this. There's a letter on the back of the bottle.
We have to say what it is first. Instead of beer, we're drinking herbal water. I went to Whole Foods. I was like, well, if I'm not buying beer, I might as well try to buy the most expensive water I can possibly buy to try to somehow make an equilibrium. And so I have found this stuff called Ayala's herbal water. It comes in something that looks almost like a wine glass. It's this like frosted glass. It's quite beautiful. And it comes in various flavors. We are enjoying today lemongrass, mint, vanilla, and cinnamon orange peel. It's pretty tasty, although Kevin thinks lemongrass, mint, vanilla tastes like the dentist's office.
Tastes like the dentist. Smells like the dentist. Tastes like fluoride paste. It's like no question. But refreshing.
Refreshing. No preservatives, nothing artificial. Kind of funny.
I'm not going to read the letter, but the signature is wonderful. Healthy regards, Dr. Ayala. Pediatrician, artist. Innovative cook and founder. 100% good for you.
So in other words, I can't wait till we can drink beer again.
White people drink on for a white people diet.
Yeah, pretty much. And we're in Saratoga, California.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So this week we wanted to talk about a game that's been talked a lot about quite a bit in the past week or two, and that is Gasketball.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a game developed by I guess two guys.
Yeah, Michael Leifer. I can't read my own handwriting. And Greg Woolwind, and their company is creatively named Mike and Greg, one word with an N, no hyphens. So it's like it is your classic indie, duo, two guys. I'm assuming one of them is the artist.
It might be a programmer artist duo. I don't know.
Yeah.
What does it say in the credits? We should see. But
there are the credits. Yeah.
Yeah, the story goes that they made this game over the course of about 2 years and put a lot of their time, and I understand also a lot of their own money, life savings, that sort of thing. The word on the street is that they went homeless with this game because they just didn't perform as well as they'd hoped. So we wanted to take a look at it. I hadn't had a chance to play it and I thought, hey, let's see if this game is good. Let's try and see if we can, glean kind of what went wrong and, give a little bit of a developer perspective on maybe what we would have done differently.
So, Greg is the, artist.
Awesome. And they have a pretty catchy tune, as you can hear.
And there's some music. Yeah.
Yeah. Music? Kevin's iPad. So let's dive right in. Basically the gameplay with, did you figure out who's the artist there?
No credit for the musician.
No credit for music.
Freesounds.com.
No, I don't know. Good place to buy sound though. Quite a few websites like that where you can, not have to hire an audio designer, but, on the topic of audio design, Kevin, where do you get your sounds?
Soundeffect.com, sound-effect.com.
Yeah.
And
that
then I mix,
pretty good.
And then I mix in, mix them together.
You do it yourself.
Yeah, just okay. You know, like the flamethrower, the bio dart, like finding the right air hose sound and flame sound and whatever else. And
cool.
Yeah,
we've been using we have a sound designer. His name's Jamie Scott. He did the sound for Gears of War and a bunch of other things. So he's great on Zombie Gunship. But we also use Apple's. I think it's called Logic, the big like sound suite, and it comes with this like enormous like multi DVD audio sound instrument everything library that you can pick off of. Yeah, it's a pretty good value for a few hundred bucks. Anyway, sorry, we digress. Gasketball. I guess the basic gist of the game is that you're flicking a basketball around. It's kind of a game of horse where there's this cute little robot and he challenges you to make a certain shot, and you have to basically, you know, by flicking your finger with the ball, you know, going in the correct direction at the correct speed. You're going to be hitting things, bouncing around things. It almost reminds me a little bit of like Casey's Contraptions, sort of, where you know, moving things around, and there's a bit of a physics puzzle. And of course, the goal is to get it into the basket after hitting the appropriate bits on the course. It reminds me just a little bit of that old golf game. What was it called? Gosh, ketosis brain fart. What was it called?
Golf game?
Yeah, it's that one super something golf.
No, I haven't played.
Super stick golf, something like that. Super stick.
I've seen. No, I haven't seen it.
You guys know what game I'm talking about.
I mean, I've seen it on the charts, yeah. But I haven't played it.
Really, really sort of similar feeling I got in that game too, where there's sort of levels. But yeah, and then the whole kind of idea behind Gasketball, it's similar to sort of 90s shareware, where I guess the main upsell here is unlocking the full game. So you're going to get
more levels.
More levels, and I can't quite tell whether you can buy the characters individually, but there are a couple like other robots you can choose from.
It looks like they used to be.
I guess now they've bundled it into.
And then they bundled it. Maybe I'm not positive on that.
So it's a one-time buy. There's no virtual currency, anything like that. You just pay $3 and you unlock it. This is something you don't see super often on the App Store
anymore.
And
it's sort of like, you know, putting the light version and the full version together.
Yeah.
Though before we, you know, we should leave the money part.
Yeah. Let's talk more about the game itself. So, I was talking to Kevin, like there's an enormous amount of content in this game already. Yep.
But it's not immediately obvious.
Right.
I mean, for me, I, you know, with Angry Birds, once you play two levels, you can figure out exactly how much content there is in the game. And in this game, it's just not the case. I now know there's an enormous amount of content. I mean, absolutely enormous. And one of the reasons that it wasn't obvious is that there are, you know, there's a hierarchy, just like there is in Angry Birds or in Cut the Rope, where or my personal favorite, Amazing Breaker. There's, you know, like a section. You know, like a world or a box in the case of Cut the Rope. And inside of that is a grid of levels where you can see is empty stars or the stars that you've gotten. And each of those is a level. So it's just a one level of digging down. In Gasketball, there are many levels. So first you have to pick an arena. And once you pick an arena, then you pick, I don't know, I call it a challenge group, a group of challenges.
Right.
And then inside of each challenge, you see, now is where you start seeing the stars. You actually see stars and you see how many shots you've taken and you see how many of the like targets you've hit. It's not clear I know what that is, but it's not clear what to call that. And then you drill in, and then each challenge is a set of levels, which are almost like puzzles, really, basketball puzzles, horse basketball puzzles. And you complete those to try and maximize your stars and your use the least amount of shots and the hit the most amount of targets. And it's actually quite complex. You know, when I say it, I mean, it's not like this is not rocket science, but in games like this, you know, that immediate understanding of, oh wow, like this game is fun, and look, I can do this forever. That's like the feeling you want them to have, and that's right. The feeling that gets them to maybe upgrade. Once again, not going to talk about monetization, but really, it's something where you immediately recognize the value. And I think that that's, you know, gameplay aside, even though the game has a really good first impression, you know, it's really polished. Like even on Retina iPad here, you know, it's just sharp. There's nothing that's pixelated or anything. It looks great.
And nice little touches on the UI too. Like you can tilt on the main menu to kind of slide the side around. It does cool stuff. Well, that was working earlier.
Maybe it was just a coincidence.
Huh. No, it was totally. I was able to physics this thing. Oh man, it's like messing with my head now.
Uh-oh. It was a really cool dream. But to get to the game, I mean, in the game you are, you know what Arash said, you are essentially flicking with your finger, not even flicking, you're sort of holding and releasing this ball. And this is the first thing is that this is a challenge. You know, to talk about this from a developer perspective, the input you're getting is not perfect from the touchscreen.
Right. Those touch events are not...
It's very accurate in terms of where your finger is. It's really great, but... Even if it wasn't perfect, even if it was perfect, still the combination of the lack of perfect input, especially depending on the CPU load of the
right
of the device at the time, getting a consistent, being able to say, let's just say take the simplest level where you're shooting a ball in a basket, being able to do the same thing 10 times in a row or even twice in a row is extremely hard. And that makes this kind of input really dangerous. I know that from experience because I made a game where you do that, and I had to really, to make it fun in Card Dealer, I had to hold hands hard. I mean, no one plays that game, but still, like, I, as a player, I knew what I had to do, and watching other players, and it was, you basically, the input is like indirect.
It is very hard.
They're like doing the swipe, and you're figuring out, are they just like playing, or are they really playing the game, or are they just goofing around, or, you know, are they doing kind of the right way? Like, really trying to figure out how good they are. And then depending on that, basically help them a variable degree to sort of like, well, you probably meant to do this. And that's a simple, like, flicking a card the same distance every time. This is really complex, and so it makes it really difficult. That's why you have like Angry Birds, you know, it's a
the rubber
slingshot
band system.
And it's a lot easier, and they show you where it's going to go,
right?
So it's a lot easier to adjust, make small adjustments,
right? The other option also is like things like games like Flick Kick Football, where you actually, it's more of a swipe kick, where instead of actually dragging the ball with your finger and throwing it, you're like, you're swiping through it, and then based on like the length of the swipe.
Right. And also in that case, they seem to be doing a good job of sort of interpreting what you're doing.
Right.
And there's two additional parts. One, there's not an upper bound.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can hit as hard as you can and you can still get it right. So you don't have to get it in a window.
Right.
And then you can also adjust. You can like swipe, you know, like they did all these things that are like suspension of disbelief, but they end up leading to a really rewarding experience. I'm really glad you brought that up.
Right.
And Gasketball, it's hard. Like when I was going after, like, okay, I'm gonna get like all, like I'm gonna get 3 stars, or I'm gonna miss no shots, and I'm gonna get all of the targets.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you get to the last level of the challenge, and you like your finger gets like slowed by the grease on the screen from your previous shot, you know, and it makes it pretty hard. That said, none of these things in my mind make this game doomed to fail or something, or, you know, we sort of didn't talk about this, but this is sort of the reason it's been in the news, is that this is a great game that they spent a lot of time on.
It's by no means a flawed to the point of failure type of game.
Right. It's just sort of that's sort of one of the more unique things about it. But anyway, there was an article written on Penny Arcade, that they, you know, like Arash said, that they had gone homeless, but, you know, but it wasn't because it didn't get downloaded at all. You know, people like this game. So, you know, really we'll continue talking more about the game a little bit, but then we're going to transition over into, well, actually that might be coming sooner than I think, but I'm just watching Arash play right now. Anyway, I'm getting distracted. Talking about the monetization issue, because that's the issue. I mean, even though at the time it had like 200,000 downloads, 200,000 downloads monetized, okay, free downloads is going to make you somewhere between, you know, at the very low end, like $10,000, to the highest of the high end, you know, on a like a Dragon Veil type game, you're going to make $1 a user. So, if they had done a good job, it's still not, I guess it's enough money to make you not homeless. So,
right. Well, I mean, let's just take a typical conversion on this type of game. It's usually what, between 3-5% are going to upgrade to a full version. I mean, and this is super variable depending on the game.
Right.
But if they're charging
for $2.99,
back of the envelope, let's say it's $2.99. You've got for every 100 players, three of them upgrade. That's going to be 0.03.
It's basically 10%. It's going to be 20 grand. I mean, it's going to be like 18.
They're looking at 8 cents a user, 8-9 cents per user, which, you know, should be okay depending on, you know, the numbers they got.
Right. But there, the thing is that that, so this goes into, let's just, you know, I don't know. I'm like trying to, like, I know there's other things for, that I have to say. I wrote a lot down about this game, but
it's got to be less than, I think it's got to be less than 3%.
The thing, though. The reason it's less for them is first off, like I said, the value proposition is not clear at the beginning. You just see these two like challenge groups. You're like two, and you can see that there's like a bajillion that are hidden, but you're not sure what those are worth. At first, I thought that they were like, that was like, oh, look, each of these challenge groups is like five levels. But it turns out each one is like, it's like 30 levels plus these challenges or time-based challenges. But the thing is, they only let you play for like, you basically play this, you can play through this game in like 10 minutes.
Right.
And these kind of games, they're not like, they're not these euphoria games.
Exactly. That's what I was sensing, is that like as I was playing this game, I became tired of the game before the point where I was like, I need more levels.
Right.
And so that's the key balance, right? You have to keep the player in the zone where they're like, ah, I just wish I could have more.
But I don't think that this game, like, the thing is that for this kind of game, and the same for Angry Birds, Cut the Rope, actually a little bit more euphoric for me, is that there's so much value you get from a sense of completion. You know, and like, so if you give them a sense of completion, like, I'm done. Right. They're like, well, do I want to do that again? That's right. What it feels like. But if you give them, 10 times as many levels, they're still going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that they have been played it for 10 times longer, which means they probably told their friends about it and it has a lot more value to them. So that's really hard. Like, how do you get them? Like, so you're basically giving them a finish line, no matter where you put it. It doesn't matter if you give them one level or like 90% of the levels, you're giving them a finish line.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so then they're like, okay, I'm finished. I beat the game as it was presented to me.
Right.
And I can either decide like that, but in order to buy more content, you need to like the experience.
Exactly.
And it's not that, it doesn't matter like how, like Angry Bird, like I said, Angry Bird is the most successful game of all time. I think I prefer the experience in basketball for sure. I'm not the biggest Angry Birds fan, but you know, still, if they put a line anywhere, they'd be like, okay, I'm done. In fact, you'd be like, finally, I'm done. Like, that's how I am. It's sort of like, you know, you're at a restaurant, you order a meal, you're in pain like halfway through it, but you're like, no, I'm going to keep eating this, even though I hate myself right now.
Okay, yeah.
That's how I feel about these kind of games, which is why, you know, but as soon as you finish, how many times at a restaurant do you order more?
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's like sushi or something and you intentionally.
Well, and this goes back to other things like does this game not have the addictive, and they mentioned this, right? Like something they said about Dragon Veil, the creators of Gasketball said that Dragon Veil is a game that's very addictive. And it's like, what do they say? Like they're like cigarette dealers or something.
Well, yeah, they're just saying that it's playing on our weakness to addiction and compulsion.
And I think one of the issues with basketball is that it has none of those dynamics for me.
Right.
Like, is it like, I don't get any sort of like, you know, a little bit of a dopamine surge like when I'm playing this game. It's like at the very end, maybe when I get all the stars, I feel a little bit better. But
and there's a little rare.
There's not like, enough of it for me.
There's rarely like a really cool random thing happens. Like it bounces off this thing and it like goes off the screen and goodness, you know, like, but it's,
yeah,
it's few and far between and it's not by design.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're right. The dopamine. There you go. Surge never happens. But that's what these games are about.
Right, right.
And that's, you know, sort of, it's a little bit, it's kind of marketing.
Yeah.
It's like knowing what your game is.
Right.
Knowing who plays this. Like Call of Duty people are not like, finally, I'm going to take a break from Call of Duty and play basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Those like hardcore first person shooter games, they're like all about like drinking Mountain Dew and like maximizing their like reaction time. This is more about completion and about challenge and about surmounting a challenge.
I still think though the issue that sets this apart from Cut the Rope for me is that it's the repeatability thing. Like every time I do this game well, like every time I get it in the first time, I feel like I was just lucky. Like I can't reproduce it because of the oil on the screen or my finger being inconsistent or.
So it's not that you don't have the self attribution which you need to feel good about.
Yeah, and that's what totally kills the reward for me.
Which is I would agree with that totally, and that's why I think we both agreed that there should at least be, because on some levels, it's better. A little bit to be, because they give you this area in which you can move the ball. So you can kind of change your angle of approach. On some of the levels, that can make it extremely easy if you are smart. But what they could have done is also give you the option to like switch it to like a slingshot mode.
Right.
Where now it's, so it's actually, it would be better for most levels, I think.
I mean, they could take it even a step further, give you slingshot mode and also give you a thing that shows you like, this is where you had it in the last try.
Right, exactly. Then it, just then like Angry Bird style.
Exactly. And then it eliminates all of the right. sort of like, let's just chance our way through this.
I would even argue you could put that right in the game and you could just switch it.
Yeah.
You know, and you could try it both ways.
Right.
I mean, like, which way is better for it?
And they could add that in a weekend.
Right. Oh,
so,
yeah.
So if I were, Mike and Greg, and we were like, well, we're screwed. We need to do something. And they give, you know, 50% of this game to Limbic and Oxbrain and say, fix this for us. So what would we do? We would add that. I think that's actually a pretty good idea.
But reorganize the levels into at least, you know, remove at least one, because there's four tiers.
I would just make it a totally flat structure. Like, right. I don't see what the point of the arenas is.
Well, you need the arenas because it's, once again, it's this completion.
Fair. So it's like the boxes in yes. Cut the Rope. Okay.
Yeah.
So we have arenas, but then we just kind of leave everything within the arena as just a separate level in the arena.
Now, and there's, yeah, I like the time challenges. That could be like a separate mode, though, maybe.
Modes, or it's just a type of level. Like, you just have a big grid, and then some of them are time challenges, some of them are not.
Right. I would also make it much more clear, you know, there's this idea of like that it's horse, and so you're supposed to duplicate an action. You know, in the first few levels they show you the robot doing it.
Yeah.
In the second ones they just basically like highlight the pieces, like doop 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 doop, like you need to do it in this order and the things highlight in red. That's okay. But it took me a while to figure out that I actually needed to do it in a certain order.
The visual language that they use to represent that stuff, I think, is a little bit obscure. Like, I think they could just have little numbers next to each one. Or there should be a thousand ways they could have made that more clear.
That shows you, like, you know, 10 dots. And as you hit them, the dots fill up. So you see that, like, a dot is missing.
And they could even have the dots, like, on the objects. Like, they could go pretty far making this really clear. The whole matching, what is it called? Matching points, like the check marks.
Really, yeah, yeah. I just call them targets.
Yeah, that
and it's just not clear. And it's, and we're like, and I'm looking for it. And then the what was I gonna say? Oh, and then, or you could do it the cute style for like kids or whatever. Just have like the robot, like you should like tap the robot and then he should like do the shot,
give you the option.
I imagine that would actually be pretty challenging code wise. I guess, no, you just have to program it in. I guess, you know, they just have to record one good shot. I mean, and assuming they are using a fixed time step, it should be pretty easy.
I mean, it's just a position and a velocity, and not even, it's just a velocity.
Right. They just, I mean, yeah, I have to, yeah, they're probably using the.
And they're using
a reproducible physics.
Well, and there's
engine.
No character animation either. I mean, it's just a laser that comes out of the guy's head.
Right.
So.
Right. Oh no, they definitely could have done it. They did it.
Yeah.
But it is, and they probably figured out, man, it's annoying to watch this robot shoot this easy shot every time.
Right. But there should be like, give me a hint or something. Like,
right. And it is kind of like a hint too, because what's his angle of approach? You know.
Right.
I
haven't played far enough into the game to get into a situation where like it's not clear what direction I'm supposed to throw the ball, but I can imagine like. If that's part of the challenge, that might ruin the challenge. Like, maybe part of the puzzle is to see, like, figure out the puzzle and figure out how you're supposed to do it. Like a again, Amazing Alex type of thing. But, yeah, I don't know. So, okay, so there's that side. What's the, how do we feel about the $299 full version upgrade shareware kind of deal?
It should be paid.
I think so, too.
I mean, all the games in this category have always been paid.
Yeah, and I think it only makes sense. Like, I would sell this game for, you know, I think $299 just charging it up front would be totally fine.
Because it's iPad. It's iPad only. That's another thing to talk about.
So Casey's Contraptions did the same thing. It's one of the few games I can think of that was pretty big that was iPad only to begin.
Right.
And then they added the iPhone at Rovio. So
data shows that, you know, that you pretty much double your money. If you can have a decent experience.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be universal at $3.99 or $2.99, do both. Or they could even do 99 cents on iPhone and $2.99 on iPad if they wanted to double dip.
Right. If they could do an HD version. And then, just to rewind, just that makes it all the more important that there's a slingshot mechanic. Because now you don't have enough room to move your finger and do flick.
Yeah, it's a pain. I would totally segment it that way. And I think they have some cool ideas with like the two-player mode where it's like on the same screen. The little like multi-shot thing.
And then they have the Game Center like horse mode and stuff.
Yeah, so they could put those in the iPad version or something.
And then make it at $299, exactly.
Right. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity here.
Anything else?
Would you keep the robot customization as an extra 99 cent in-app purchase per each one? I think it's kind of...
Because it's not a part of the game,
to me. True, but you have games that have sold a lot of cosmetic features.
Once again, I feel like there's this sense of choice, like a larger sense of choice, not like if there's two, I feel like you're like, whatever.
Right.
This isn't part of the game.
Well, unless it's like some amazing thing where I just want to see the robot. Like if there's a, like the current one, you know, blows up the ball using a laser, and then there's another one that like shoots rockets at the ball.
Right. If it was really cool.
And maybe they do that. I don't know.
But they wouldn't pay money. I wouldn't pay money. I mean, some people do pay money. I'm not the person to ask for this, but when it's on a car or like an RPG where like, you know, who you are is part of your character, then it makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
But you know, really, you know, if you can't, it's, you don't have to graft a virtual currency system onto your game. I didn't in Zombie Highway. I mean,
yeah,
not because that was a choice, but because it didn't originally. So I grafted IAP onto my game,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't want to also graft currency onto my game. If you can't do it, that means that you shouldn't try and do in-app purchase. You know what I mean? Like you now. So in other words, Zombie Highway could easily be converted to a game where you make money and then you use that money, to buy guns.
Weapons. Yep.
So it's okay because I basically removed that middle step, mm-hmm. and I sacrifice probably a small amount of revenue, or a large amount maybe. But in this game, it's like everyone is familiar with this formula, so you could try and graft it on there and be like, okay, you unlock your arenas with money, or you buy things with, you know, whatever. That wouldn't make any sense. And people will be like, what? You're going to charge? Like, this doesn't make any sense. So you can't. So you don't, like, that. At that point, I would say, okay, I guess it's like we're making a paid app. And that's like, that's the discussion that's had like 23 months ago.
Yeah.
Assuming that this was the game that they were working on 23 months ago, you know.
Right.
People hear 2 years and they assume that, mm-hmm. they're like, okay, and this is the game we're going to make. We know exactly what it's going to look like, and we just need to work towards that goal.
For 24 months.
They could have easily worked for 18 months and then been like, and then
changed
totally
course a few times. Yeah.
So totally. We don't know.
No, that's how game development goes. So I switched to paid. That's good. Switch to paid, add a slingshot, and our check's in the mail.
There's some more. The things we talked about, changing the tiers and stuff. There's some real challenges there because they have so much data there, the stars and the targets and how many shots you made or missed, which is sort of weird, or how many balls you had left over, which is sort of counter. You know, there's so much information there. So how to, because they clearly want to show that, and my suggestion to them would be to not show that. In other words. I think actually Mega Run suffers from the same. There's all these things. There's gems and there's stars. Actually, there's only gems and stars. But it's, I think
too
people
many
like
measures
having
of
one
success. Yeah.
Right. There's like one metric.
One thing.
And show them that after the level. Look, you missed some shots, and you missed some targets, so you don't get 3 stars.
Yeah.
It should be
obvious from the game itself without having to have all this.
Right. Have the points and have the stars.
Yeah.
You know, that's what, because it's like when I'm looking at this, I'm not like, you don't want to be like, oh, I really want to go and do it with not missing a single shot, but I'm willing to miss some targets.
Right.
In other words, you don't like, if you're not.
Yeah, the two metrics can fight each other.
Exactly.
Totally.
So unless there's a mode of play where the player literally is trying to improve one of the metrics and not the others,
yep.
then it should be displayed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sort of, and I know this feeling because you have this idea and you see it and you're like, oh, this is so awesome. But then it's so hard to accept that no one cares, right? Or like the people who care are like, probably aren't even buying your game.
Right.
And so this sort of, what I want, I don't know where we could have jammed this in, but I also want to talk about the real problem with why free works and why this doesn't work.
Sure.
Is that when you're free, you're getting a lot of value from your players who aren't paying you money.
Yep.
Because they're playing your game.
Yep.
And you have them for however many days they play your game, and they are sort of your like sort of roll of the dice advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're going to tell their friend, and maybe their friend will buy it, or maybe their you know, or at least they'll tell their other friend. You know, I don't know, I need to go on with that. And by using the level upgrade, it's like a double whammy. You're removing the value, so you're actually like super free. you're removing the value that that player would have given you by playing your game. It's right. gone. So
now they can't play it as long.
Right. And you're also using this system that is not effective in these types of games.
Yeah, it sounds like what you're saying is then that they should monetize more on gameplay enhancement rather than content purchases.
Right, or they should just monetize on the fact that it's or a quality game and that
or at least just monetize all of the content rather than some of it being embargoed.
Right, because you see, this is a game that actually I think screenshots pretty okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why they use their menu as their first screenshot. I remember this is exactly what Arash said last time. Like, this showing one of these levels is pretty cool, and showing
right.
maybe do, showing the path of the ball bouncing around.
These screenshots are totally by the book.
Like it
they've
looks,
got the explanations of what you're looking at, their little characters. I mean, these I can't fault their screenshots at all.
They just put the menu first.
Whatever, that's easy to fix.
Right, but I mean, well, all screenshots are easy to fix.
Yeah, this menu doesn't say much to me about the game, especially as the first screenshot. And the description seemed like it was
And here's
okay.
the thing. It would be so easy for them to fix this because everyone, like, they could release an update where everything became free and everyone would rejoice. And all the people who paid money, they're not like going to be like, hey, all of a sudden, like, I'm mad because I really like this game, but I could have paid for it with, but all these other people got it for free.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably one dude out there who's like really mad, but he has serious issues.
I think it's fine. I don't think there's going to be that much backlash.
No,
it
I mean,
just
there's
be like, this was our initial launch sale and now it's paid.
Right. Exactly.
All the time.
There'll be zero backlash, but I guarantee you that they're thinking a little bit about that. Like, oh, we have these like people who, it's like, don't worry, dude, you're homeless.
Right.
Like, they gave you $3. maybe some of them by accident. So
yeah, I guess that's Gaskaball. Let us know if you agree, disagree, if you have any other ideas for this game. Contact at Walled Garden Weekly.
Yeah.
Also, if you know Mike and Greg are out there and they want to talk to us,
yeah,
we'd love to chat. We'd like to sort of take the rest of the show and talk about the big question of monetization. What are our feelings on monetization? There are many ways to monetize an app, and you know, I think people have been successful with just so many different ways.
And we talked about it a little bit.
Yeah.
With Gaskaball.
Yeah.
But more generally.
And we've even just as developers, you know, Limbic's games from Tower Madness to Zombie Gunship have been very different in the way they use virtual currencies, things like that. And I'd love to hear about what Kevin's thoughts are too. But before that, I mentioned last week that I would continue playing Rage of Bahamut.
Oh, wow.
And I have held on.
Wow,
to
we
that,
don't even need to talk about monetization. I don't know if we need to.
I'm going to just say real quickly that I've continued playing Rage of Bahamut. I check in, you know, about once every day or two. And, you know, I have to say, I'm starting to, I didn't think I'd say this considering how much I hated on that game, but it grew on me a little bit. And I'll tell you why.
It grew on you.
It did. So there are a couple of things that Rage of Bahamut does really well. The first is that they have this like, they have a whole lot of kind of like daily login bonus type stuff where you log in today and you get like a special coin pack and you can do some quests that give you extra stuff. And so for me right now, like my motivation to check in Bahamut is to see what card it's going to give me. So it's totally activated that part of my brain that like was excited to get magic cards and open in a new pack and see like, oh, I've never seen the art on this one before. So I think the art is cool and I'm like, I want to see more art and I'm like unlocking art to play the game. So if I get two cards of the same type, I like to evolve them together to see, you know, what the next like more awesome, more badass version is going to look like. And it's weird. Like I still feel like even though I've been playing it for a while now, I don't really understand the whole game. Like I don't feel like I'm a player that's using all of its features. I'm just kind of in a small subset. Like I understand how Evolve works, but like the enhanced thing doesn't make any sense to me and I haven't done that much. And the battles and combat are totally just like I don't even care about. I'm basically like I'm kind of collecting frogs. Like it's Pocket Frogs, but with these cards instead.
I still hate the game that you're talking about.
Yeah,
I don't know. I still don't know what it is.
I don't either. That's a funny thing. I mean, there's
another game you might like. It's called 777 Slots.
Oh yeah, that
one's
good too.
Because you know you open it up every day or so, and you like pull this handle, and you might win
something,
and you match, and yeah. It gives you a prize. I think it's being ridiculous. But.
Well, despite you being facetious, I think really what it is the.
It's
slot
the art.
It's the original thing that we thought was good about the game, which is the paintings.
Okay.
I just like want to see more of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it just because
I'm like I want to see what the next cool thing is?
I know
is
you don't have a thing for like scantily clad like
whoa, it's
anime
a, like,
chicks.
I don't. It's a grass fairy. Oh, it's a sweet like level 8 skeleton. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. it's surrounded by HTML5.
Would I have played this game on my own if HTML5, I wasn't if HTML1. I hadn't given myself this assignment? I don't know if I would have. I don't think I'm enjoying this game the way I'm supposed to be enjoying it. But yeah, there's I don't know.
You have like what's Stockholm syndrome?
Yeah, maybe that's
you're
what
you're like. It's not quite the right application of the syndrome. But
I'm imprisoned in the cell of Bahamut.
Your brain, you were like beat up by this game. And now you're like, oh, but I kind of like him. No, I don't know. Fair enough. At least you gave it a second chance.
I did. I really wanted to make sure I
I hated it.
But
you didn't.
Yeah, I think
that's kind of cute.
It. Maybe I like it a little less, or hate it a little less, but definitely not going to continue playing. So now we're going to crack open the cinnamon orange peel water and talk about monetization.
Cinnamon orange peel water.
Hope it doesn't taste like dentist for you. All right, so monetization. Let's talk about what we've done in the past. So with Tower Madness, we followed a path that was not totally unlike basketball. You could play the game and play a whole lot of free levels, and then we made map packs. And we didn't do this initially. I mean, the game started with a lot of free stuff. Yeah, it is a minority. I'd say the paid levels make up less than 30%. Of the total library of levels. And the other thing you can purchase is an enhancement to gameplay, which is weapon packs, or weapons specifically, like the flamethrower and the landmines, and we have a little flash bait thing too.
There's a play to win element to those too.
There is. They do
pay
make
to
you,
win, excuse me.
They do make you better as a player. I mean, the flamethrower is pretty competitive. Now, the thing is that I gotta pull the tab there. Yeah. What we've seen with selling these for 99 cents is that there's still a lot of players that play the game. I should also mention that there's a paid version of the game and a free version. So we are monetizing. Oh, there's these microphones really pick up like the every little bubble.
I really wish that was beer.
It's kind of still you can hear refreshing effervescence.
But I support Arash and his mitosis or whatever it is.
Mitosis. That'd be awesome, right? Like I'm sitting here and I'm gradually splitting in two.
You know, the extra weight just removes from your body.
My belly's gonna go and make apps on its own. Is that better? What do you think?
Yeah, it doesn't taste like the dentist's office.
Cinnamon orange peel. Okay. So what was I talking about? So we have a paid version and a free version. Free version uses ads, and the paid version is exactly the same as the free version, just no ads. And within the free version, you can actually pay $2.99 and upgrade to the paid version.
Just remove the ads, yeah.
Really straightforward. We also have a separate iPad version. It's $8, and it's got a few extra things like a multiplayer mode. But that's it. So no virtual currency.
And has the IAP. It has the same IAP.
Same exact in-app purchases. And the in-app purchases sort of carry over between versions, but not completely. And then what else? So with Zombie Gunship, totally the opposite. We've gone full virtual currency.
I remember at 360 iDev 2010, you were like, those guys are using coins. I don't know who you were talking about. It's like, we got to get on that coins shit, man. And I was like, I don't know, Arash. That stuff's pretty coin. I don't know. And then like you were super right. And then... Actually, Nuts came out first, but...
Yeah, that was our first foray.
It was all coined up.
Nuts has always been a bit of a testbed game for us. Like, if we have an idea on something we want to try, it often ends up in Nuts first.
That's useful.
We did the same thing with iCloud, too. We tested it out in Nuts first. But so with virtual currency, I guess, the games that have been using virtual currency, it's not clear whether they generated more money just because they had virtual currencies, but I do think it makes it... I don't know, for some reason I feel like it's easier for players to decide to buy something when they've already tried it in a way. So if you're earning coins through the course of gameplay and you're spending coins through the course of gameplay, I feel like it's more natural for you to then buy coins and spend those as well.
Because you're also not deciding how you're spending your money.
Exactly.
You're just transforming your money into another form of value, which you kind of understand now,
right?
And that you want it,
right?
Even though if you don't understand why, but you're absolutely right.
And as players, like we're so conditioned to this now. Like you've got your, or as people even, like you've got your Starbucks card where you've converted your money into Starbucks money, and you've got Microsoft points and all those other currencies.
People like that. They don't have to think about it. They don't have to think about what they're
spending.
It's ready
to go. You can purchase it whenever you want. So that's something that I've been pretty fond of. Now, one thing that we haven't done that I see a lot of people being very successful with is more than one currency.
Mm-hmm.
Dual currency. So, yeah, the dual currency thing where you have...
tri-currency.
Yeah, and we mentioned this a little bit when we talked about Pocket Planes several weeks ago. I think that might have been our first show. And it makes it a bit easier to monetize on currencies. So one issue that you run into having one currency is that you have a very difficult balance problem where you have to decide, well, how quickly can the player earn currency on their own through playing the game? And then how do we base price of the currency off of that? So you have to come up with some kind of like, this is how much an hour of a player's time is worth, and that's how much we're going to charge the currency. But there are all these issues. Like if you want the players to spend money and you want to make like a certain thing really rare, then it makes it really difficult for the players that are playing to be able to earn it. And you have this thing where you have like huge numbers coming up suddenly because you want those things to be things people buy. So like, for example, I can give you this totally random example. Like, let's say you have this game where you want to buy like a fast airplane, and the airplane is like 1,000,000 coins because it's like the best thing in the game. But you don't earn 1,000,000 coins very quickly. Like, you earn like maybe 100 a day. And most of the game is played with like numbers in the 10,000s. But you have to make this airplane 1,000,000 because you want people to be able to like buy it with coins. The problem comes in though when the player does actually buy 1,000,000 coins in order to buy that airplane. If they don't buy that airplane, they now have 1,000,000 coins. And that totally balances a game or imbalances a game that's based on transactions in the 10,000s. So what people have done to solve this, and we saw this in social games, is you make a second currency where that currency is essentially either artificially more rare and you don't earn it through the normal course of gameplay. And usually it's tied to some kind of real world currency value. And so you have to buy those ones. So in Pocket Planes, you've got like the coins and then you have the bucks. In Zynga games, you've got usually like some kind of energy thing, and then you've got like a, you know, another like special gems or whatever. Like,
and it allows you, it does exactly what you're saying. It just allows you to control more, oddly, for how much some of the hardcore gamers hate IAP, it allows you to control the experience while still incentivizing people to spend money on your game.
Right.
Because, right, you don't want to like, you know, I mean, there's other ways to do that, because like you could also say like experience is another way people do this, where you're controlling what can be bought with experience, and then but you don't sell experience.
Right.
That's akin to Pocket Planes, right? You can buy planes, but only once you've unlocked them.
Sure. And then you can meter out like how quickly do you let your whale players actually progress through the game. And that is something to balance as well, right? Like if a player is someone who's very keen to spend a lot of money in your game, well, there are a couple things. So first off, you know, you don't really want a player who's keen to spend a lot of money to spend the money and then very quickly kind of see everything there is and tire themselves of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's generally a bad idea when you're designing the monetization. You want to have it to be where they still have to play the game, but maybe now it's just easier or more cool, or they can show something off to their friends, but they haven't just suddenly made the, you know, a game that's designed to last 5 hours, last 10 minutes. And this happens all the time. Like if you ever played a game where, you know, you can unlock like a God mode or, you know, old PC gaming, like you'd had codes for infinite money. And I remember when I played SimCity, like the game was awesome and I played it for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then I discovered the infinite money cheat.
Yeah. And then you're done.
And then it like, I suddenly was able to build any building I wanted, do whatever I wanted. And like, I got sick of the game in 2 days.
Right.
And I stopped playing it after that. So
it's how I feel about Jetpack Joyride.
Okay.
It's like, if I bought everything in that game,
yeah,
I would just not want to play it anymore.
You just
at
would
all.
Stop playing. So that's one side of dealing with high rollers, I guess. And the other is this idea that some people are doing, which is you can start tracking those players. And you can say, oh, this guy is buying a lot of IAP, and you can even like do different things for them, like have a special message that says, hey, thanks for all your support, here's a extra special thing we're going to give you. And you can totally segment your user base. And so if there's some guy who's like never spends anything, and I'm not saying you should do this, but one idea would be to like, you could start showing that guy ads
or give him more money.
Or give him,
which is sort of weird because keep him playing.
Yeah, keep him playing. Or I mean, it's so you can decide what you want to do with your segments. But the idea
is
that
you
have segments, and you can write code to handle each type of player differently.
That's really interesting.
Yeah,
because I haven't. I mean, you know, for unannounced project that many people could guess, you know, we're going to coins, and I'm trying to, like, I'm dealing with this issue right now, and I'm also trying to innovate a little bit. But it is really interesting because you're like, wow, like, if you give players choice, it's like, what if they spent all of their money on this, you know, or what if they spent all of their money on that? Is that going to ruin the game for them, you know? And it's really challenging. I mean, it's interesting to have this perspective because usually the perspective is like, ugh, IAP sucks. Like, it ruins gaming. I mean, and it is a challenge, but some of the more stronger devs are certainly like, it's just another challenge. It's just like, it's like dealing with the touchscreen. Okay, it's just a new variable that's like, how do we make this kind of game fun?
Yeah.
Because now we have a different input.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, now we have a new market and you can't sell games for $6. So how do we make them fun and still make money? And some people are trying and some people aren't. And now the undisputed king is CSR Racing.
Yeah.
And their mountain of money.
Sure. And they did something completely different, right? Where they monetize with in-app purchases, but instead of putting them in a store like everyone else did.
In addition to putting, I mean, they did that. Well,
they do have that. But the course of like where people are spending a lot of the money is just, there are kind of
opportunity-based.
There are opportunities to go in and spend. And I think we're going to see a lot more of this, given their success and all that. But it does involve really carefully planning this as part of the game.
The opportunity, Zynga has done the opportunity-based stuff. Like, they're, I mean,
true.
It's,
yeah.
I think that, I hope we don't see a lot more of it. I got to say, because I think that this is the kind of thing that will raise more eyebrows in terms of, dare I say, government regulation. Mm-hmm. Like, it's now you start, it's gambling. It starts to move more towards gambling. I mean, everything is gambling when you look at it in a certain light.
Well, how do you see it as gambling?
Because, well, in some cases, it's not gambling. Right. But, you know, in CSR Racing, if you bought that like Super Nitro and then you like dropped your phone, you would lose $3.
Yeah. But I mean,
anyone tried that? That'd be hilarious if you just did nothing and it like totally goes and wins anyway. And, it, you know, it's true. It's not. But it is. I guarantee you.
I mean, you don't hope to make any monetary gain by playing CSR Racing, right? Like, you understand that the money you put into the game is never coming back. So
yeah. But I don't know where you get the gambling aspect. That's not what people understand. Like, the. You know, yeah, I understand that, but not like everyone I've ever seen play CSR Racing is like 8 years old, and they don't understand A, what $3 is,
yeah.
B, where it comes from, or C, where it's going.
Sure.
And they don't understand why they want to spend it. They might have some, like, I want it. Why do you want it? Because I want it, you know, and you could definitely say that applies to regular IAP, but it's idle. Mm-hmm. It's sitting there and it's like, you know, hey, over here. Still like, I still have a problem with it, but you can definitely do it in a way, because there's always a choice,
right?
You always can choose to sort of have a very similar experience without spending the money. In CSR Racing, there's just no way to get the Super Nitro without spending the money at that moment.
Something you're onto, though, that I think is different about CSR Racing's approach is that in the case where you're offered the Super Nitro, like, let's say you're racing the big boss guy or whatever, and as I remember now, it's like you wager like 5,000 coins, and if you win, you get his car, and if you lose,
you actually wager the gold coins that you just won by beating him.
Okay, so but you could even take it a step further and say you have to wager your own money to play,
mm-hmm.
and then at the moment the race is supposed to begin, then it gives you this opportunity to Super Nitro. And now you're not even motivated, like, it's totally different from regular in-app purchases where you're going to, like, add something extra, unlock something cool. In some ways, you're buying insurance when you buy this super booster.
And you're so buying it's insurance against
your own loss of coins.
Right.
In their case, yeah, they just gave you the coins, so we'll take them back. But what if we set it up differently? What if we made a slots game or a blackjack game where, you know, you wager something and then it's like, hey, you know, this hand's not going so well. You want to, like,
cheat?
You want to, yeah, exactly. You want to pay $2 and change the card you just got?
The reason I could, regardless of what ethical debate I could get into, there's nothing about this that makes the game better. That's the thing that, in the end, there's just nothing about it that makes the game better.
Not at all.
So that's where I draw the line. And I say, like, why does IAP make your game better? It's like, well, it does because my game exists. And the only reason it exists is because I can make money to, like, feed my family. So it's like, hey, you know, I think a lot of devs would totally much rather make a game that costs money and People get paid and they get to just 100% control the experience without IAP, and they make the same amount of money. I don't think anyone would choose differently, but that's just not reality. This is beyond that reality. Okay, you've accepted the reality. You need to do in-app purchase to have a really successful game. This is finding ways to trick people to spend more money.
This is different from that. I mean, I think,
and
I think
it's a business, you know?
And there's two classes. I think you're onto something totally, where you have one group of IAP where it's, instead of people paying $3 to buy the game outright, they get to play it for a while, and you gradually get the $3 from them because you prove to them that this is a game that's awesome, and they want to support you, and they want to get more of the game, and that sort of thing. That is entirely different from the psychological aspect where they're compelled to spend money because, like, there's something else going on. It's not about them supporting the game. It's not about them, like, you know, gathering the full experience gradually and working up to $3. No, it's the people, like, playing CSR Racing that are spending hundreds of dollars a week.
Right.
And that's very different. Like, you would never be able to sell a game for $150
right.
on
so,
the App Store.
And
but they're making $150 on some users.
Because, I mean, I also, like, that's one thing I always, that's another thing I always say is wrong, is when there's those IAP, wrong or, you know, distasteful, is when there's these $100 IAP for your, CSR Racing is like a game I could easily see in an alternate universe selling for $10.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's a quality game.
Sure. It could, at some point in time, could have been a console game for $50.
It just has like two button gameplay.
Yeah, but I'm talking like an SNES game or something.
It would be an Xbox Arcade game for like $9.99.
Yep.
You know, and it has licensing and all this. So I totally get it. Like, I totally would even understand $20.
Sure.
Because it's like the special edition. You know, like, the value is there.
Right.
But it's like, letting people spend hundreds of dollars. You know, these subsidy models, it's a little bit hairy. And it's, obviously, they're saying there's an upper bound. So that's another thing, but it is separate because it's still part of the, like...
Sure. And there's some devs who say, like, you know, we're not going to sell any IP over $20. I saw a game recently that was like that. And other people are like, yeah, why not? If they want to spend $200, I'll make it $200 IP.
Just not to make it that easy, right? To make it like, right. I mean, Nimblebit, like Tiny Tower had a $20 one, and then Pocket Planes added a $40 one, but you can always buy two of them. But it makes it just a little bit harder.
Yeah.
No, that's a really tough, I mean,
there, I was
at
just
the point
reading,
we are in this conversation.
I was just reading an article about like how McDonald's managed to get people to buy more food. And it was like, you know, a lot of companies prior to kind of the idea of larger sizes would just like, if you wanted, you know, if your salad wasn't enough for you, you have to buy two salads. But there's like a psychological implication. It's like, oh, you fat ass, like, why are you eating two salads? Like, but it's a lot easier to stomach kind of from a self-worth perspective to just buy one once rather than like, I'll just buy the super salad.
Right. Oh, that's,
and it's
that's
as much as two regular salads, but I feel better because I'm ordering one salad, and it's like, it's sanctioned as one meal.
That's totally. Yeah. And
it's sanctioned as a meal by having $100 IAP. You're saying it's okay.
Right.
Like there are people that are buying this too.
That's an
versus having,
point.
Having a $20 one that you have to buy five times. You're like, well, what's wrong with me? Like, why am I buying
this
five
like
times?
Like if someone is buying two of the Nimblebit $40 IAPs, they're probably like, man, I have too much money.
Yeah.
You know,
like
if
Apple started selling iPhones in a two pack, like I bet you there's some people out there who would buy them because there are situations where I've wanted to have two iPhones. 1% problems. But
my point is that you feel
weird buying two right now. Like why would you buy two unless you're gonna give one to someone?
Right.
You wouldn't
it's
have two
for
phones
someone else,
it's pocket.
Not for you.
But if they had like a two pack, then
you'd be
like,
oh
okay.
Yeah, like people do this.
Maybe that's all right. This is a stretch as an example, but I'm
that's true. But you're right; it just makes it okay
all the time for things like food, and I think IAP is going to be the same.
And but it is interesting because I really feel like this you know we're running long on time, and we could definitely spend a whole nother. I mean, we should have a more structured conversation about.
Well, I think there will be part twos to a lot of these shows. Right. So a marketing part two, and most likely monetization part
two
is underway.
But for monetization, you could almost like break it down and like have a part like a show about like currency and a show about slot machines and a show about like the ethics of monetization. And for me, the ethics is the most interesting thing because I don't like it. Like I don't like. Like I'm doing IAP because I need to. I didn't plan on making it doing as well as it did. But it's not ideal. And I don't think there's anybody who thinks that it's ideal. It's just what had to be done. The thing is that it is a slippery slope because basically once you're a developer and you accept that this is the thing that you need to do to survive, so to speak, where do you draw, where do you, how far down that rabbit hole do you go?
Sure.
And I think a lot of devs have trouble with that.
Mm-hmm.
And they, like, don't know. And there's no, like, you know, for there's like professional ethics codes for like CPAs and for doctors and all this.
Yeah,
and obviously this might sound a little grandiose, but I think developers need that too to like know
as an industry. Maybe some guideline would be cool, or something that people agree to in the Game Makers Guild. But I mean, you're faced with this every day, right? It's like, do I make a better life for my children by making my game ask the player for money more often?
Right.
Or do I make the right game for my players?
Right.
And I think, you know, both of these are
right. It's just that for, you know, the example I get, you know, and if that was the question, you know, but for to beat up on CSR Racing somewhere, not that they deserve to be beat up on because they actually made a quality product, but if they had removed that Super Nitro IAP, they still would have made multiple boatloads of money.
Yep.
And so, you know, that, so it's not the like, the, so the question is,
I mean, there's totally,
it purely becomes, should we do this?
There are shades of gray. Yep.
But that's the thing. Like, it would be interesting. I talked my fiance's ear off about this about a year ago or something, about how there needs to be this, like, these guidelines. And then I actually, like, published my guidelines when I released my IAP on Zombie Highway, on the Zombie Highway 1.4 update or whatever it was. That I, like, made these rules of the road and I followed them, because it's one that once you go down that road, man, it's yeah. like, and even now still I'm like, ooh, I could do this. And I'm like, wait a minute, I shouldn't do that.
That must be, that's interesting too, like, as a single developer trying to navigate that river, because for me, like, some days I'll wake up in the morning, I'll be like, yeah, I've got this really awesome idea. It's like, it's just totally diabolical.
And then Iman is like, and then dude.
It'll be either Iman or usually it's Fulker who'll be like, yeah, that idea is a little scary. Like, maybe we shouldn't do that. And I'll think about it like, yeah, that's not good. Let's not do that one. But then, you know, there'll be other things
where
it's like,
and vice versa probably, you know.
Yeah, all the time. Like, it'll be something that's a little more conservative and someone will be like, yeah, why don't we just do this thing? And I mean,
why don't we do like a donation monetization scheme? And Arash is like, no.
No donation.
No, you're fired.
But yeah, I don't know. We don't talk a whole lot about the monetization in our games. I think at the end of the day, I think the one thing to say about this is that first and foremost, for any of this to work, you have to build a good game.
Yeah.
You can't wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to build a game that monetizes really well.
Though, exactly. But I do think it is, like, you know, what I want to say, dishonest to pretend that it's not a good idea to just graft at the end.
Yeah,
because that can lead to it being kind of shitty too. You got to be like, how can we make this fair throughout?
Yeah,
and that's what I have to say about that.
Definitely cool. So, well, that's quite a bit. Thank you for joining us once again. This is week 7 of Walled Garden Weekly, and we've been getting great letters from people. And I encourage you, if you've got some thoughts, I'd love to hear them, no matter how big, how small. Contact @WalledGardenWeekly, and thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.